Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide the lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy late, it's a photo finish.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a three-year-old bred in Pennsylvania.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners or other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Exactly 15 to the top of the hour. Jeff Taylor is going to join us in a couple of minutes. And Hammer is digging through historic charts. This is what happens when these conversations bubble to the surface.
Well, I was talking about that Holy Bull one, that Woodward, that Holy Bull one, and I found the chart. And listen to this lineup. It was an 8-horse field. He beat Devil Is Due, Colonial Affair, Gopher Gin, Bertrando, Tinner's Way, Pistols and Roses, and Brunswick, which is quite a lineup. And I was reading the jocks that were in there: Mike Smith, Jerry Bailey, Jose Santos, Chris McCarron, P-Val, Pat Day, Johnny V, and Julie Crone. And it was, I tell you what, I see Bertrando in there, and I see Bertrando at that time was chained by John Sheriffs.
Jesus, I don't remember that at
that's
all.
That's what I said. I think I learned something here. And I, my computer went out. I just went back, and I'm counting down the horses. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. John Sheriff.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, and you know who is, he's over there?
No, he was. I was going to ask him, and then because Frankel is training the second horse, the horse after him, and I wanted to make sure I counted that. So anyway, that was when you start chart digging, you find a lot of things. But
we mentioned Sheriffs, and you said he came, you know, he was here and he came over. He yesterday I talked to him as I was getting ready to leave, and we stayed here about an hour after the show was over, and John had come over. He had a couple of late gallopers, and so he and I ended up talking for like a half an hour. And he said, I'm going to have to bring you. How long are you here? And I said, a week. He said, I got to bring you. You got to see my Morris Park souvenir. And he brought it over to us. I'll take pictures of it. It looks unbelievable. It's like a leather portfolio that they must have given away or sold at Morris Park, which is, one of the great historic ovals of New York racing history. And
I don't know Morris Park.
Looking forward to seeing it. Morris Park?
Where was Morris Park located?
Morris Park was in, I want to say, the Bronx, as it happens.
Oh, not Long Island?
I don't think, no. I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was, it was not one of the Long Island, I want to say up, in the Westchester, up toward Westchester, in that direction.
Well, John is a student of the game. He enjoys all kinds of, he's directed me to books and all kinds of lookups about the game. So he's a reader and a racing historian. Yeah. And it has stories that you can't believe.
Westchester.
Westchester.
Yeah.
Huh.
That up toward right sort of where Westchester and the Bronx, where the Bronx ends and Westchester starts. I don't know what the years were, but John Morris and Jerome Park, they had to close this. I didn't know they had to close Jerome Park. This will, people will instantly recognize this. They had to close Jerome Park because they built the reservoir that you drive by when you go up and down the Sprain. And the Bronx River Park.
So Jimmy was listening to the discussion, obviously. So he sent a picture that we both have on our mantles. That's us.
Oh, that's fabulous. You got to put that up. That's tremendous.
That's us.
That is tremendous.
Yes. my wife, I think Gina took that picture as well. She was the photographer of the day as we were busy. But and it's funny. So we had the box. I don't know how we ended up with the box. We ended up in the hotel, the restaurant. And we go, we can't be in here. We can't be loud in here. And we ended up with the box right at the stairs that you went down
to get to the
paddock.
Track, yeah.
So we were loud, and so we were making a lot of comments that day. And I remember after that race, we were harassing just about everybody that went by, except for the Holy Bull contingent. So
who took that picture?
Gina.
Oh, Gina did.
Yeah,
okay, cool.
She took the pictures.
Very
so,
cool. Very
yeah.
Cool. Jeff Taylor is standing by from Oaklawn Park, and normally we would say, Jeff, that for years this was, the big wrap up to the season, but not anymore. The season keeps going. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you, Hammer? Good to hear you again, buddy.
You, baby. Good to hear you. You were on about a month ago or less. Yeah, about a month ago, and I just said, flashback. Hear your voice. I missed your voice. I missed coming up to the press box and shooting the bull, and I'm just thrilled that you have a well-deserved dry weekend. It's going to be sunny and beautiful, right?
Yeah, we have earned that right for sure. Almost 80 today, about the same tomorrow. A few passing clouds is all. But, we, for some reason, the last couple of years, can't really catch a dry Saturday, it seems like. But, it always worth it looking at the weather this weekend. It is absolutely perfect.
Well, the the card came together pretty nicely as well. As we get another, here's another onslaught of horses, a little bit less for this edition than the last one. But let's start with the Derby. I no reason not to. And the principles are pretty clear, Jeff. You know, how do you shake them out?
Yeah, it was the difference in the morning line, I think, is the most stark of it all. I mean, you know, you've got three grouped right there closely, and deservedly so, I might add. You know, 8-5, 9-5, and 5-2. And then I don't think I've ever seen such a vastness between a third choice and a fourth choice. 15-1, a couple of co-15-1s. And that's where the profitability is going to come up, guys. We all know it. You're going to have to try to run somebody close to double digits or above into the mix somehow to cash a nice ticket. As I mentioned, the big three in here, Mystic Dan, Moot, and, of course, Timberlake for Brad Cox, who can't do much wrong these days. They're going to get pounded, and deservedly so. But, you know, this is horse racing. We all know you can bust the big three up if things fall into place. And my customary attitude is toward value, as you well know, and I'm certainly going to do my best.
Well, how do we make money out of this race then?
Well, it's who steps up to the plate today, and you know, I personally feel like, and I'm not alone because I've heard his name drop several times this week, I feel like the horse with the greatest potential for significant improvement is Medina's Liberal Arts. He wasn't admittedly 100% when Mystic Dan defeated him so soundly in the Southwest over the sloppy racetrack, but dry footing today, Medina looks like he's got some additional bottom into him. I think he moves forward at least 15% or so, and that puts him in the mid-90 buyer range, and that's going to be enough to at least contend. I'm not going to say he's going to beat all three of these, but I think he's good enough to run in the mix. And he's a value play in here, I think, without a doubt. Muth, obviously, I wouldn't say obviously. Some people are going to debate he goes favored or does Timberlake go favored. I personally feel like Muth, given Baffert's reputation here locally, is going to carry a little bit more clout. But those two are going to be very close. Muth did work better, I understand. His last work was very good with Winstock. Baffert wouldn't move him out of California all the way across the country if he didn't feel like he had a good hand to play. And I think Muth is going to show up. Obviously, Timberlake is another that's making his second start of the year. He's moved forward, I think, off that 93 number that he got in the winning the Rebel. It matched the 293s that he had in the Juvie and the Champagne last fall. So he at least has not fallen off any. There was, though, I think, one of the biggest salient points all week long was reading Brad's free Derby watch last night. Of the eight horses that Timberlake beat in the Rebel that ran back last Saturday, only one managed to light the board, and that was Carbon, who ran second in the Hot Springs and Ungraded Mile event here at Oaklawn last Saturday. So that carries a lot of weight to me. I'm a big believer in company. And now we have to really question how much did Timberlake actually beat in the Rebel. So there's two question marks there on those two. The third, Mystic Dan, does he need a sloppy racetrack to run his best? Perhaps. You look at his work since that last win. He did work better over sloppy racetracks down there at the fairgrounds than he did over fast. So there's a little chink in the armor for all three of these horses, I think, that at least makes them somewhat vulnerable, and maybe an upset is going to be in the cards.
Jeff, interestingly, some of the principles, most of the principles, and even, you know, even a potential upsetter or board hitter like Liberal Arts, they have not been preparing at Oaklawn. You know, Timberlake, you know, went back to fairgrounds, and you know, Muth obviously is coming from out here at Santa Anita. Mystic Dan went back to fairgrounds, etc. Liberal Arts is at the Thoroughbred Training Center in Kentucky. So you don't have eyes on them. But the ones you've got eyes on, I'm curious. Eddie Milligan got a ground saver for Mr. Horton and Mandy Pope. Will take it. When's the last time we saw prices like 20-1 and 30-1 on Steve Asmussen runners?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
They've been working. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Informed Patriot may be the true bomber here. If you're going to look at a horse that's going to be 25-1 or more, if you can toss that Sunland race, and, you know, it's tough to do as a handicapper to kind of like eliminate it, but we all know that shipping sometimes works out, sometimes it doesn't. Desert Southwest this time of year is pretty dramatically different climate-wise. There's just a myriad of things that could have gone on with Informed Patriot. You scratch that race out and look at his prior efforts. He was third to Catching Freedom in the Smarty Jones, and we saw what kind of race he ran, Catching Freedom, and winning the Louisiana Derby last Saturday. That's obviously good company. He was only 2.5 lengths behind Liberal Arts in the street sense last fall at Kentucky. And to start his career, all he did was set the pace for Deterministic 7 furlong maiden score at Saratoga. Now, those are three primary players that certainly that Informed Patriot was competitive with. I think, again, if you can eliminate that Sunland race, he's back here, Informed Patriot. He's the only one that we've mentioned so far, as you so astutely stated, that has been training locally. He knows the racetrack. He's run well over it. Yeah, I'll take a little flyer on him at 25 or 30 to 1 to be sure.
Well, there's it's not 20 or 30 to 1, but it was 11 to 1 when Ricardo Santana and Creator hooked up
to win this race. Watching that race, because that was a fun race to call when you know he's moving like that, and it's Santana on the outside, and he's got horse. He's at least going to mix it up late, and yeah, that was that's a very, very good comparison here for sure, Steve.
Hey, Jeff, I'm going to throw another one at you that, sure. As I was looking last night, as we're looking for prices to come back with, I was looking at Lucas's horse, Just Steal, and, you know, throw that last one out. He just had a bad trip, and, you know, they must have thought something of him because he was 9-2, so he's going to be dismissed. Yeah, you know, you ran a good second in the Southwest, so let's say that's in the mud. But go back to that Smarty Jones, where he runs a very sharp second to Catching Freedom, and you know, I don't know. Wayne has got that new jockey trainer combination that clicked.
Yeah.
That clicked, and they're in again. But I don't know this one. Everyone's talking, including you, about Liberal Arts. So I don't think we're going to get anywhere near 15-1 on Liberal Arts. And I don't think he's going to be in the 10 area. But I can see Just Steel drifting back up again. And this is the forgotten horse. And I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean it's this is Lucas's MO. I mean he's danced every dance, as we say here. And yeah, that was not a good trip. In the Rebel at all. He got parked outside and never, ever got a chance to relax. But, you know, 5 wide both turns, I think he had. I had him calling for Equibase, and he just never really got into the race. Again, you mentioned the best story of the meeting thus far, I think, without a doubt, is young Keith Asmussen and Lucas hooking up. I mean, they're already going to be in the Oaks with Lemon Muffin, and
right.
Certainly this would be a great potential double for him. And to Keith's credit, And you know, we all have our opinions or whatever, but he has, I think, improved light years from his riding just last year. I mean, he's become so patient. He just looks like his hands are just so kind, and he sits and he sits and he sits and he waits. And this is maybe the kind of rider that Just Steel will respond to. He's only going to have one run in him, Just Steel, and Keith's timing has been nothing short of remarkable this year. That's why he's winning races. And it's not because Pop's putting him on everything that's live. That's simply not the case. He is doing it with his own riding ability. And as I said, it's one of the better stories of the season so far by far.
I mean, well, it has to be. You don't win 39 races, you know, at a place like Oakland without having a little talent. And of course, that family knows how to bring along riders. They didn't just, right? And so that's, I don't know. This horse has kind of caught me. And if you mentioned what's behind you. That's half the battle, and to see who these horses have beaten. And maybe together they haven't beaten a whole lot. So in cases like that, you know, maybe you find a price in here. But
absolutely, and I'd say it would be just to add to the legacy that Lucas and Young Asmussen have put together so far this season. If they could get not one but two on the first weekend in Louisville in Churchill, that'd be a great, great story.
Well, the Arkansas Derby and, Brad Cox, that speaking of loaded wagons, heading, you know, back toward Oaks and Derby, Timberlake and Mystic Dan and Muth, the principals, but Jeff Taylor giving us some ideas to either upset or to weave in with the principles. Let's back it up into the fantasy, Jeff. And, you know, the fantasy, I've been basically beating the drum all week that this is maybe as intriguing a race as there is anywhere all weekend.
Yeah, and I could not agree more. I mean, other than Tarifa's rise, ascension to greatness, really, for Cox in winning the Rachel down there at Fairgrounds, and, of course, the Fairgrounds Oaks last week, you kind of look past her, and parity has been the name of the game in the Philly division this year. I mean, it's just everywhere you look, something else seems to happen, you know, and I think this is a great example. You know, there's 12. That's why this race almost overfilled, because there is so much parity and there's no standout. West Omaha's not going to have that target on her back today after that disappointing third. And it wasn't a terrible race, guys. It just wasn't kind of like what we were expecting from West Omaha at that resounding Silver Bullet Day win at the Fairgrounds earlier this year. That race has lost some credibility. You know, it just hasn't moved forward with some of these fillies. You're certainly going to have your share of prizes. You've got a New York bred, My Main Squeeze, who I know virtually nothing about. Her paper looks good, but there's a big square S beside every single race. And I know New York breds have improved. That happens when you get that kind of money from gaming to run for up there. But she's still never faced open company. Then you got West Omaha, who I think will improve, I think. So certainly Lemon Muffin, who, no, there's a Lucas and Asmussen team up that I mentioned. They got into the dance with the win in the Honeybee at a very, very big price, but she's only going to be a fraction of the 28-1 she was that day. 9-2 third choice. I'm thinking maybe around 4-1 given the kind of headline connections that she has. But take your pick, guys. I mean, this is what I did, and it may just seem like a cop out, but I went to the California Maiden. Where's my ring? I mean, and why not? You know, she loves to run second. That's obviously not a good thing, but that's where I'm going to start putting some vertical bets together, I think. It's 6-1. She's run as fast as some of these. She's grade 3 placed, and that's a credential that most of this group cannot support. I mean, they have not done what she has done, and I know the California ranks have thinned over the years, but where's my ring, I think, at least gets a piece of this. She's tactical. She can run on or off the pace, and this is a real cloudy pace picture in here, I think. I really don't know who's going to go and who's going to whoa, but Where's My Ring has kind of done both. And, yes, she hasn't had her picture taken yet, but I think she gets part of it. I think she's just that talented, and she's run that fast. And a lot of these fillies in here have not run as fast as she is. And that's a very simple kind of conclusion, but that's basically where I started with this race.
Well, and there's a great history on this weekend, whether it's Baffert, you know, coming in from California and doing well at these weekends at Oaklawn. I want to ask you about a local horse that's coming in with the lightest resume. You know where I'm going. Mike Pewich is a very accomplished horseman and very clever. All things go. This is ambitious, taking a maiden winner and, you know, nice fig and a good benchmark. There's even winners that have come out of that race from February 16th. What's your impressions, Jeff, watching All Things Go prepare for this spot, stretching out?
Well, I would be curious to talk to Mike, and I have not done so, about, you know, was this just an aha moment when she crossed and she's 3 in front of a pretty decent field? I mean, the third-place finisher, Justin Pinion, came back and flattered with a maiden win of her own. So, obviously, she beat a little something in there, All Things Go did. She's a granddaughter of Uncle Mo on top. She's got some Irish breed on the bottom, which indicates stamina should not be an issue for her. The number spoke for itself. In mid-80s, that's going to be a solid number to build upon for this maiden. It's going to be interesting to see what she does. She looks quick enough to make the lead in here. And if she gets loose, I mean, stranger things have happened, and I think she'll be every bit that 20-1 that you see in the morning line. So, no, trust me, guys, nothing in this race would surprise me. Absolutely nothing. It just looks that wide open to me.
Yeah, you know, I kind of liken it to the Honeybee. The Honeybee was wide open, and what happened?
Yes.
A maiden won that one. And
yes,
this
first
is,
time
this...
to turn maiden, yes.
Right, so very, very, very similar type race, and I'm like, I'm going up and down the field as we all are, and I said, you know what? Lemon Muffin did it once. I mean, maybe she can do it again, and maybe you're going to get a decent price. You know, it's not like she's not consistent. She's right there. She seems to fire every time, And so I don't know if she's going to bounce, but I don't know. Sometimes they just come back and do it again. But yeah. Obviously, Where's My Ring just kind of got tired of Kinza and said, get me out of here.
You're going to get tired, probably.
Right? No, it means get out of here for a little bit. And you exactly what you said is right. She forget the M there. That's by her name. She runs some nice races, and maybe has had running in some more tough horses that fillies that are in this one. So this is a grab bag.
It is. Absolutely.
Jeff, I want one more question because you got that exacta that had to be separated by the camera at Sunland. Recharge. And Candy Isle, Asmussen, and Fincher. And then there's Eddie Milligan that has got the Honeybee runner-up that returns here, and Tappet Janali, Tappet Philly, who, is obviously okay. And, this is what makes this race kind of fun. You got some mix and match. I certainly would love for an Eddie Milligan to have, a big day on a big day.
Yeah, he's a much better horseman than people give him credit for. This is how far he and I go back. He was still riding back in the early and mid-'80s when I started in this business. Junior was. His dad was a respected horseman. And, nothing would please me more than for Eddie to get a good horse and a spot in the dance there up at Churchill. So, she wouldn't be a surprise. She's been part of this before. I see her in the mix here. She's got a little bit of speed to her. I don't think she's going to be far off if not on the lead today. And similarly, Recharge, she was kind of she was the one to catch in that Sunland race. And she dug in like a ground squirrel, as they say, and managed to gut it out. She is a maiden or a winner of the mile on the 70 at Houston. And I know that doesn't pack a lot of clout to a lot of people. But her numbers have been creeping up. They're not in that 80 range where they need to be. But this could be a wake-up for her. And Asmussen, this is another price Asmussen horse that certainly could surprise. Steve has a way on Arkansas Derby Day to excel, especially back in the days when it concluded the meet. He had a lot of ammunition, as he does this weekend. And I remember some five-baggers he's had on Derby Day here. So nothing would surprise me if that barn gets rolling early and often.
Well, they've got plenty of options. They've got a horse in every race except for the opener. As it happens, and I'm surprised that he didn't have somebody for that second level allowance, going a mile and a 16th. You would think that he could have dug something up and had a horse in every one of the thirteen races. 13.
13.
Let's talk about the Matron, and this it's kind of interesting that this race is put in here as part of the sequence, and is this a new creation, or this race sort of, when I opened up the PPs, I was like, where did this come from, the Matron?
Yeah, I don't know if they ran it on Derby Day here last year. I think this is only the second running of this race, if the memory serves me correctly. And the older filly and mare sprint division is a little bit, I'm not going to say a stepchild anymore, but it does really pack a lot of clout, so maybe you get some of those 7/8s in New York later in the summer. But here it's always been a competitive, a competitive division. No big, hard, heavy hitting, superstars per se. And this is a pretty blue collar group, to be quite honest with you. And you're going to see some horses in here. Zeitlos perhaps holds the most intrigue for me. It looks like Steve really got this mare right when she turned the corner late in her 3-year-old year. She's won three straight now. She looked ultra-professional in winning the carousel. Gablione was on board that day for the first time. He kind of split horses there out of the turn. He eased her out a little bit, and she kicked on like a good one should. And she beat really two or three of these primary contenders that afternoon, and I really don't think things are going to change too much in this spot today. The number, an 83, was not quite what I thought it would be. The New York Invader, Lulu, I think the tepid morning line favor, second choice, she's a 3-1. She ran almost a 90 last time out in her aqueduct race, but we saw her earlier this year, Lulu, and she was a decent second in an optional here. They shipped her all the way back to New York when she got the job done for the same condition. Now she's back here at Oaklawn, so she's at least been over this racetrack.
J.J. Hernandez picks up the mount. I think that's worthy of a note there. And, you know, her and Zeitlos probably going to be keeping track of each other. They both have similar kind of tactical stalk and pounce type running style. So you're going to see maybe a little bit of a kind of a little bit of a cat and mouse game between those two and Danny Ruby, who I think is probably going to contend for the spot up front today. She's kind of a speed type, and I think she's probably going to be the one to maybe set the pace.
Jeff, I'm going to ask you one horse in here, and you tell me if I'm absolutely nuts and see if she has a chance. And that's the Shandana from Randy Morse. Now, she was in the Carousel, which was run on the 24th. I knew she had scratched at some point, and that was the race that she scratched out of. I liked her that day a little bit, just on the off that poinsettia race. Now, she has been off for a little bit. She did have that scratch, whether it was a stake scratch because it was too close. Do you think, what do you think? Is it a recent claimer, which sometimes I just toss, but there's something about this one that leads me to believe that we could maybe get her into the trifecta spot.
Yeah, and Randy is having his best meet here maybe ever. I mean, he's an established horseman. His dad was in the business. I'm looking at his brother right up here, Ronnie, who clocks in the morning. So it's a great family story, and Randy has just been the Midas touch here in recent weeks. Everything he touches seems to be turning to gold, especially with Bajorano up. That's been a really hot combination, and I agree with you. Again, this race, like the others on the card tomorrow, no really standout. You know, I do like Zeitlos in here, but Shandana, yeah. I think, could run into a position here where she does maybe run back to that poinsettia runner-up spot that she had two starts ago, now that she's back, going to be back over a fast racetrack. No, she belongs in here, Hammer, without a doubt. I mean, and it falls off pretty quickly as far as the odds go behind those three that I've already mentioned. So at 15 to 1, 20 to 1, I'm going to throw her in the vertical mix, yep, to be sure.
Nice. Very nice.
Good.
Let's talk about the Oaklawn Mile. And this is taking root, this race, in a rank hurry. And this is kind of a fun bunch. Some familiar, accomplished, older horses. And where are we headed?
Well, with all due respect to Asmus, and Silver's Prospects have got his one win of the year. That's what he seems like he does the last 3 or 4 years. So to start with him at 3 to 1, and again, a very lukewarm favorite. I'm going to look past him. I think the horse in here is Midnight Rising. It's no secret that he is just absolutely freaked since they moved him off the synthetic, moved him off the grass. He's 2 for 2 here locally for trainer Jordan Blair, and has looked good both times. Now, this is going to be a little sterner test for him, obviously, with Stakes Company, but this is an evenly matched group, but it's not an outstanding one. And I think this is a horse that's going to make a lot of noise in the handicap division through this year. His numbers have been solid. Obviously, he knows what it takes to win, and he's got the perfect running style for him. I love horses that love to sit just a length and a half or two, and then when they need to go, they go, regardless if it's a half-mile pole, if it's a quarter pole, but they've got that burst of acceleration when they have to have it, because these races sometimes unfold a little froggily. But I think Midnight Rising is going to be a true miler. One turn or two, 8 furlongs, hits him right between the eyes. He's got that tactical speed, and I like him in this fight. If I get 7 to 2, he'll be a big, big part of my afternoon. I'm probably going to single him, as a matter of fact, in this all-stakes pick four. He's got to, I think, run a big race today. And he, in all honesty, does not have to beat too much in these horses that are above him in the price line, meaning Silver Prospector and Dennington, who doesn't have to win this off a considerable layoff. And I just think if you're going to single anywhere in the stakes today, I think it's got to be Midnight Rising.
Well, Manny Esquivel, who I've always been a fan of, Chicago native, and he's had a terrific winner. You know, 14%, just nice number, but 33 wins on the season. And I'm going to be curious to see where he's going to go after the meet ends.
Who are you talking about? I'm sorry, we're breaking up a little bit on me there.
Manny Esquivel.
Oh, yeah, Manny Esquivel has been a perfect journeyman-type rider. I mean, he's getting on every single outfit now. He's putting him on something. So it'll be interesting to see. I think I've heard Lone Star in a conversation. I don't want to put words or anything, but that was one option, I think, maybe. I've been impressed. I had not seen much of him, to be honest with you, prior to this meet, but he doesn't do a lot wrong. I mean, he's just one of those very capable kind of blue-collar types that just rides the horse that he needs to ride. And I've been very impressed with him, yes. Good point.
Well, and look at what Jordan Blair, I mean, it took a while for Jordan Blair to get Midnight Rising on the dirt, but obviously he was a dirt horse all along. Mendelsohn out of a Hold Me Back mare, and combined with Esquivel, and all of a sudden has really lifted his head and these back-to-back wins. So I get the affection here for Midnight Rising going into the Oaklawn Mile, and that is the race that'll start the pick five. It ends with the allowance. I know you haven't done much of the undercard work, but I will mention, Jeff, that you have an interesting occurrence in the eighth race that precedes the start of the stakes sequence. In the Oaklawn Eighth, it's a first-level allowance going a mile and a 16th. How about two horses out of last year's Kentucky Derby?
Yeah.
King Russell, right?
Yes, they both did, for sure.
I would hope so.
Sun Thunder and King Russell. Well, but I tell you, to me, the horse to beat is Underhill's Dab.
Yeah, and, and Pat Pope and Hammer, you know him as well as anybody, being in the hole for him for a couple of seasons. He put that eighth race exactly where he's going to maximize its effect. And top to bottom, it is just another, not impossible top race, but... You've got a good mix of horses in here that you could probably take advantage of if you like somebody. And Sun Thunder, I think, is intriguing. I wish you had to go ahead and push through a time or two. You know, I got all those second and thirds. But and people do like to bet him there, and he's going to be 7-2. So, Axar Ben Derby intrigues me a little bit. This is a horse that made a big run last time out, and he didn't get off very well, and Santana up here for John Ortiz, who's starting to pick up a little bit of momentum now, John is, and I think this is the horse to beat, and if he breaks a little cleaner today, I think he almost has to get part of it.
Well, it's a fun group, and of course, Underhill Stab, I'll have a steak sandwich and a steak sandwich.
Yeah.
And put it on Ted Underhill Stab.
Yeah, with a little steak dressing on the side. Yeah,
it's one of the great horse names operating out there right now. Underhill's Tab, Jeff, the Temperance Hill today. I don't know if you have a Temperance Hill thought for anybody.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning toward a 10-1 proposition. OP Firecracker. This is another Medina horse, and hopefully they have a pretty big weekend. But OP Firecracker, last time he tried a mile and a half, it was on the Keeneland turf, surface that he does not particularly care for. He fired off an 88 Byron number. He's back on the dirt today. This is another rider I really like, and it's I'm not alone, certainly Ramon Vasquez. He's very energetic, and I really like his attitude toward racing, how he approaches things. He's extremely competitive, and he gets on OP for the first time today. So I think that could be a breakout horse here. 10-1. In another wide, wide open field, I think I'll take that price.
Jeff Taylor, everybody, from Equibase, high atop the Oaklawn building, and still another 3+ weeks of racing, and it feels like, with a nice day tomorrow, and the infield will be thronging, undoubtedly. Jeff, I appreciate the opportunity, and we'll probably catch up one more time before we get to Derby.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, guys. And again, Hammer, great hearing from you again, buddy. And you guys travel safe. I know you're beating up and down the road this time of year, so great talking to you as always.
JT, good to hear your voice. You're the greatest. And anybody out there, listen to what he just said. He's the king of Oaklawn.
Oh, thank you, Rick, very much.
No, you're welcome.
Jeff Taylor joining us, everybody. Terrific. There's people like Jeff that are tucked away all over the country. And
when I say that he's king of Oaklawn, he knows every horse on the grounds. He's the chart caller there, a plus, and he knows a good trip, a bad trip, and he puts them all together, and he gives out good information. So listen to what he just told us.
Yeah. I wanted to juxtapose, the horses that are coming into town versus the ones, that are that are basically, you know, been there all meet. There's a lot to be said, I mean, for those.
What do you mean, the Oakland races?
Yeah. Well,
there's, the thing is, there's a lot of influx and out, you know, in and out of Oakland Park, especially with these type of races. And it's because not just the stakes, but the allowance races. When you see an allowance race in the book, you pretty much know it's going to go. So that really helps a shipper and horses planning their routine for the winter. If I set a horse to Oakland, I know the race is going to go. I don't have to worry about it. So that's why these races are big, especially on these big days. And I think they actually, they pumped the purses up just a little bit. I noticed a little bit of a kick in the mains and allowance races, which is always a good thing. So this is one of the bigger special days in racing, Arkansas Derby Day. They do it right. They open up the infield. The crowds come out, and it's you know, I was glad to be part of three of them. And if you're ever wandering by Hot Springs, Oakland Arkansas Derby Day, make the left turn and head there. Right? Have you been there for Derby?
Yes.
Arkansas Derby? Yeah. It's really.
Typically, much like New Orleans, because the Risen Star, and the Rebel are back to back. I've sort of put those together. This year I ended up having to postpone that, and it made for, you know, for the Louisiana Derby trip. But one other time I think we made Arkansas Derby. I can't remember if there was a year I was there with Jay and with Mary Rampolini, and I think that was a Derby. That was not a Rebel. I know I was with Jay. I was with Jay once for a Rebel, but I also, I think, for an Arkansas Derby.
Well, like we talked yesterday, it used to be 3 weeks out, so it was solo.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to think, well, am I going to go to this one? Right. Am I going to go to that one? If you were going to a Derby prep and it was 3 weeks out, you were going to the Arkansas Derby. So a little different timing, and because of the long meet there, it's worked out. I think it's worked out just fine.
They're making the most of the extended calendar, and for whatever reason, I know even though they had another series of rough Saturdays this year, it feels like the meet kind of.
The show always goes on.
It caught traction, at least. And you know what? Having the 4 days, running it in 4 days in March, has really helped.
That was one of the things that horsemen were not concerned about. But you can run 4 days there. It's better to have. It's when you're at a place like away from home, some are. It's better to be racing as often as possible. It's, 4 days on versus three, as opposed to 3 days racing and have 4 days off. I think everybody would go for the 4 days on, so it's been a hit.
Exactly. Mike Welsh, I think, standing by. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hammer's
with us. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Hammer. How are you?
Good, good, good. We were talking about some of the we had Mike Smith on. We were talking about some of the old days back in the 90s when we were 6 days a week and never knew who you were going to see, what star you were going to see come out on the racetrack.
Are you talking about Gulfstream?
Yeah, back at Gulfstream days.
Yeah, 6 days a week there, 6 days a week at Saratoga. You didn't realize what a grind that was, too.
Until you stopped doing it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do your laundry on Tuesday and get right back to it.
Yeah, no time for golf, that's for sure.
Mike, let's dive in. I know you got about 15 for us, and we'll work our way back from the feature. And, you know, all eyes, obviously, on Fierceness, and, the conversation starts there.
Yeah, it's like I wrote, you know, for the story for the race. I mean, he, you know, how he performs is the key to the race, and which Fierceness you're going to get. The one that earned himself the two-year-old championship, the way he ran in the Breeders' Cup and in his debut, or the other guy that disappointed in the Champagne and, you know, really disappointed here, too, obviously, in the Holy Bull, even though he did finish third. I mean, it was a major disappointment. And it seems like with him, the key to it is getting that good early position and not having to face any adversity, which he did early on in both races. And you know, it did take its toll in the Holy Bull. I know, you know, once he recovered and got his head in front of Hades, you really thought at that point he was just going to go on with it. But, you know, he'd been away 4 months, and he got knocked around at the start and had to be used going into the first turn. And Todd said to me that, you know, the more he watched the replay, the more he was convinced that it was, you know, it was a little bit too much to overcome. You know, it was definitely an excuse. So we'll see. I mean, hopefully he'll have no excuses here. He'll break and he'll get right out there. And if he's not good enough, he's not good enough. And if he's the horse he was on Breeders' Cup Day, he's going to win this thing.
If he doesn't, where are we looking?
You know, I guess you got to go to Hades. I mean, you know, there's still some people that, you know, doubt that race. They just, you know, figure the favorite didn't run that well, and he got away with a slow pace, which he did. But to me, it was the energy he showed on the gallop out. Aside from the fact that, Fierceness got his head in front of him, he gave up the lead and came back on, the wind going away. You add that up with the fact that the horse that ran second, you know, came back and won the Tampa Bay Derby. Granted, it wasn't the fastest Tampa Bay Derby ever, or probably close to it, but he did win it. And I think you got to respect him. He certainly won the post position draw. When you're looking at the three favorites, Hades got post two, Conquest Warriors in nine, Fierceness is in 10. I've, you know, written about the what these guys are up against breaking out in post 9 and 10. Historically, 9 is worse than 10, which is hard to believe, but that's the way it worked out. It's not from a small sample. It's from like 100 starters out of post 9 in mile and eighth races over the last 15 years since they reconfigured this track. Only two have won from there. Now, I didn't go through every one. You know, maybe the other 98 were all about 40-1 shots, but I doubt it. So it is something to think about. So, you know, Hades has that advantage. He's training well. He loves the racetrack. So, you know, there's a lot to like about Hades if you think that Fierceness is going to, you know, not produce his best game again.
And of course, Hades, you know, continues to work, you know, swimmingly, right? It feels like Joe Orsino, you know, really, you know, he laid out this plan. A lot of people, you know, jumped on him about not participating in the fountain. He didn't second guess himself at all. And like you say, I mean, he could sit very comfortably behind whatever, you know, whatever pace is going to come from his, you know, from out on Paco's right side.
Yeah, I mean, I surely can't fault him for not participating in the fountain. You really don't want to have, you know, two hard races going into the Florida Derby and then possibly a third one before your major goal, which is obviously the Kentucky Derby. Look, had he known it was going to come up a five-horse field the way it did, he might have done something different. But looking at the way the race was shaping up, you know, it looked like it was going to be a real war, and you didn't want to get in that again after, you know, he was in a pretty good war in the Holy Bull. So I thought he did the right thing. He's worked well. His March 3rd work, the 48-3, I thought was terrific. I love the way he galloped out. I thought that was the best of the works I've seen since then. The March 10th, mid at the 5th, he was hard-used pretty good to finish that day and go out. He went out willingly, which he always does, but he was, if you watch the replay, the tape of that race on XPTV, you'll see that Ray Gampath, his rider, sat down on a pretty hard V8 pole and threw the wire. I really like the other one better. But, you know, he's galloping well. He looks good. Nothing I could really find fault with, obviously. I think he's going to probably not be on the lead, but should get good position if he breaks. You know, obviously, if you don't break well from post two and you're a little late getting to that first turn, next thing you know, you could be shuffled back to sixth or seventh in this short run. But you got to like his starting position, the way things played out, assuming everybody gets out of the gate clean.
Mike, before I ask you about some of the double-digit prices, we got to talk a little bit about Conquest Warrior, who, you know, seems to be coming to hand and is going to have to be faster if he's going to impact this for Shug.
Yeah, you know, look, he's paired 84 buyers. His sheet numbers aren't bad. I mean, they're in the ballpark with everybody else except Fierceness on his best day. And you got to consider, too, that in that mile race, the maiden race, you know, he was up against it. I mean, he really had some tough luck, a tough trip all the way around. He overcame it. And then in the allowance race, I mean, he probably could have gone faster if Jackie Jose Ortiz wanted him to. So, you know, maybe you could figure those numbers could be a little higher, but he's still going to have to go better than that. And he's going to have to, you know, work out a trip from, again, a post that's very compromising. If he gets hooked out there 3-4 wide around that first turn, shuffled back to 9th or 10th, it's going to be a lot to overcome on this racetrack. We saw Forte do that last year, but at this point, I'm not sure Conquest Warrior is anything, you can't start comparing him with Forte. The distances should be no problem, and this is a very talented horse. Whether he's going to reach his peak this week, 5 weeks down the road, if he is fortunate enough to get in the Kentucky Derby, look, he's going to have to run really well here. He's got no points, so he's going to have to be first or second for sure, third at least, and then third, may or may not get you in. And Shook's not the kind of guy that's going to force his hand either. If you think he's not ready for a test like the Kentucky Derby, he'll be patient and he'll wait. He knows that this horse has got a lot of quality to him. Distance is going to be his friend. So I think it's all about the trip on Saturday, and maybe Saturday won't be the day, but maybe there'll be another big day somewhere down the road for him. So we'll see. He's going to get played. Brian Nadeau made him second choice over Hades. I'm not so sure with the post draw that's going to play out that way, but you never know. I know a lot of people are talking about this horse, so we'll see.
What price do you think Fierceness goes off?
Good question. I mean, I'm going to say 7-5-ish, 3-2, somewhere in there. If you draw an inside post, probably 6-5. But from that outside post, I think it's going to scare, just enough people that maybe the 8-5 is right. I mean, he'll be the favorite. But, you just don't know what to expect. It's hard to bet on him. At a short price, it's a little hard to bet against him, knowing that he's probably the best horse in the race if he gets his trip. So it makes it an interesting, scenario for guys, looking to step in here.
Hey Mike, run down the secondary points in this race. They call it a 100-point race, and that means it's 100 points to the winner. I think there's 50 to second. What are the What are the remainders get? I forget.
I think it's 25, 15, 10.
That sounds right. So a third place finisher to a horse that's got 20 points already probably gets you in.
Probably gets you in. Yeah, Hades, third might do it. Obviously, Conquest Warrior probably won't. Fierceness probably, third will do it. But if he runs third, do you want to go?
Exactly.
I mean, you got to, figure out, do you deserve it, do you not? Some guys, want to go if they could go no matter what, even if they're going to be 80, 90 to 1. And others are a little more realistic that don't want to go if they think it's they really have no chance and it could hurt their horse in the long run.
Mike, you sided with Le Dombro as a potential trifecta filler, and he's one of a handful of horses, real macho. Rowan Crichton really loved his Mucho Macho Man colt going into the fountain. Felt like he kind of regressed off of that allowance win. Frankie's Empire ran an okay third in the fountain for Bo Yates, who, of course, had the filly run gigantic in the Devona Dale and is going to try the Gulfstream Park Oaks. Grandmo the First, I think, deserves some credit. I mean, he was hanging in like a tiger in that Tampa Bay Derby finish.
Surprised me because I hated the way he trained going into that race. And, look, he hung in there late off at 25-1, 51. But he was hung out wide. He has not worked him since, which surprises me a little bit. I'm not a fan there. What swayed me on Le Dombro was reading Donald Harris's workout reports on him. He seems like he's getting better and better. Even though the Times don't look at his comments on his works were really excellent. So I wanted to throw someone in there at a price. They hit the board. I was, breaking up the logical ones. I was between him and Frankie's Empire, who should benefit from that draw on the rail and that two-turn race, experience in the Fountain of Youth. But the one post is a big one for him if he could just hold his position going into that first turn. But I let the workout report sway me a little bit and went for Le Dombro to try to at least hit the board here.
Speaking of the report, what time can we expect it this afternoon?
I'm going to try to get it out as early as I can. I'd like to get it up there by three, four at the latest. It's pretty much all done. It just needs to be edited. But before I could put on the finishing, I got a few more works I got to add in. But before I can do that, I got to finish up the Sunday Rainbow Six story that I'm doing to for the big giveaway here on Sunday.
Finally, you got three, maybe four outsiders. I at least want to mention their names. Catalytic, Safi Joseph. This is a Catalina Cruiser colt that's coming off of a Tampa allowance try. You have Seminole Chief that negotiated the synthetic first time on it. Had been seen in the Withers for Jack Sisterson and for Brad Grady and a partner. It's actually a Grady homebred by Gervin and Iris's Dream for Cheryl Weinbaugh. And Bail Us Out. You had told me the other day to expect a second Pletcher Rapoli, and this is a looking at Lucky Colt that broke the maiden on the Tapita, but has every right to run on the dirt. And that was a decent race. I went and watched that.
Yeah, you know, Todd knows he's got to step way forward, and I don't think he has any designs on this horse winning the race, but he thinks he can sit back, and he's the kind of horse that distance is also going to be his friend, and that if there's a pace meltdown, I think that's the words he used, he thinks this horse could maybe come along and get Clunk a piece up. At least. Obviously, he's giving, you know, a lot of way on experience coming out of the maiden race, just the way Catalytic is, and you know, Iris's Dream only has three starts. Conquest Warrior only has three starts. Hades only has three starts. So, you know, maybe it's not that much experience to some of these. But, you know, I think that's his best hope there is to, you know, grab a share if a couple of them get hung out or get used up too much going for the early lead. Seminole Chief is significant, I think, because Jack Sisterson said they're going to send him. They want to be on the lead in the same manner they were when they won last time.
Interesting.
He thinks that's his best chance. So if nothing else, it's going to make business's task of, you know, getting some kind of position and not getting hung too wide early on a little bit more difficult if he's got that horse rushing up inside him into the first turn. Catalytic, you know, he's supposed to show speed, too, coming out of a couple of sprints and stretching out around two turns.
Well, with all that happening, with all that consideration, Hades is going to get a dream trip behind a phalanx. Hades is going to get first run.
He should. You know, theoretically, he should. But, you know, these races at a mile and an eighth here with the short run to the first turn, and if you read the story I did, Todd kind of laid that out. He said all the jockeys know that it's a short run to the first turn, and you got to get position. And he says sometimes it can be a bit of a rodeo going into that turn. And you break a step slow or, you know, you get somebody outside, you drops down. The next thing you know, your dream position is you're sitting seventh or eighth and behind horses. So theoretically, we could, you know, spend hours poring over these PPs and figure out who's going to be where. And then the gate opens and half of that changes. And, some of them wind up not being where you want them to be as a better, or they want to be as a rider, trainer, owner, et cetera.
Well, let's back it up and get a few more opinions. The Appleton goes as the 13th, and it looks like you want to see the 6-year-old gelding of Cassie and Barbers and Partners. Ice Chocolat, 9-2.
Yeah, Ice Chocolat's in really, really good form. You look at his numbers, his sheet numbers are, you know, in a good place right now. Again, this is one of those races where it really is all trip. I think Lucky Score is probably going to come out. He's entered back on Sunday, so he may come out and defer to a stablemate, Ice Chocolat, in here. But, you know, these turf races for me, they just, again, you know, they just never wind up, or mostly most of the time don't wind up going as you would plan them to go pace-wise or position-wise, and there's always a lot of contenders. They're usually close finishes, and whoever gets the best trip on a given day is going to come out on top.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you a question about post position outside on the turf at a mile here. We know what it's like on the dirt with some of those races. Is it as bad on the turf?
I mean, it's not a, you know, a long run to that first turn, but there's enough time where, you know, I think, you know, at least it gives you a fair chance to try to get over.
Okay.
I haven't studied the numbers on it, the figures over the years, but 7.5, obviously a little tougher because it's
sure.
a closer position to that first turn, the gate.
Okay. I just wanted your feel. I'm looking at Churchtown out there, and I was just wondering whether to put a line through him or keep looking at him. I know he hasn't won a race in a little bit, but I like him in there a little bit.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to go back and see just what the post position numbers are. Obviously, in any of these races, the further they get out, usually the lesser chance they have to win.
Sure.
You know, not like a harness race at a half-mile track, but although these mile and an eighth and mile and a 16th dirt races, you feel that way a lot of times.
You know, he loses Errat Ortiz to Never Surprised, the other Pletcher in here. But Quality G has taken two steps forward. Really, three steps forward over the winter, Mike. He's 12-1, and he looks tactical to me, and I don't mind Leperu on him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how significant it is that Irad, you know, chose Never Surprised. I don't know if Todd said I want you on that horse. I don't know if he had the choice and said I'll take that horse. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously he's coming off a race that he certainly should move forward off of with Quality. He just beat him a nose, but it was his first start in way over a year. So on paper, anyway, he seems like the better of the two, and odds he's going to be the shorter price of the two. And he's got Irad, but, you know, Julian, if you can work out a trip, you never know. I mean, the value is, I never argue anyone who wants a little value at these races that are so well matched.
Well, I don't want to dwell on it, but you know, he cost me Quality G catching Never Surprised, cost me a pick five and more, you know, last big weekend, and you know, I'm not really thinking about that, but I'm looking at the figures, and he's moving forward, you know, nicely.
Never Surprised did all the dirty work that day.
Yes,
it was
he
a
did.
Hard effort for him. So you know, you might say coming back in 4 weeks off a big race like that, returning from a long layoff like that, maybe he's going to just go the other way. It's possible, and there's some other speed in here. Big Everest was inside. Saratoga Flash. So it looks like an honest pace scenario, and Never Surprised could get himself involved in that, which obviously would give Quality G a bit of an edge in the rematch if it turns out that way.
Mike, a couple other ideas. Sand Springs, market segmentation, 7-5 looks tough. And speaking of Chad, Ways and Means, the big name in the Oaks.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tough part about this card. I mean, there's so many horses with giant question marks, either a bunch of the Chads coming off layoffs that on form seem to be the best horses, but, you know, who knows if they're going to be prime for their optimum efforts, you know, with such a long year ahead. You got a couple of, or at least two or three Clements coming in from Europe, you know, off layoffs and making their U.S. debuts over, you know, what's going to be firm footing. Might be a little strange to them, although, I mean, you look at La Mahana, for instance, in the Orchid. I mean, the only race, actually, there is no firm, you know, races on his form or her form, so she's a bit of a question mark there. That's just one example. There was at least one or two others, too, just trying to flip through the pages real quick here, of these kind of horses. Cortez at least showed a victory on a firm track. Cortez is going to be in the Pan American going a mile and a half, but, you know, hasn't run since September 11th. And you just see the last time he came off a layoff like this was earlier in his career at St. Cloud and, you know, finished third in a group three at 7-2. So, you know, he might be a horse that could need a race. It's just so many questions, especially in these big fields, with turf race big fields. Sometimes it feels like it's just a dartboard kind of situation among all the possible contenders.
Mike, I'm noting that in making Ways and Means your best of the day, Fiona's Magic didn't make the cut for you in the hitting the board.
You know, I just thought that was such a, you know, tough effort for her last time. You know, now she's got to go two turns for the first time. I think there is some other speed in here. that's going to run with her this time. I don't think she's going to get loose on the lead like she did. Gunsong is going to probably go into Champagne. It's going to be forward, and Do-Gooder, I see from the inside, really has no choice, I think, but to go. So, I just tried to side against her. I just think Ways and Means is so talented, just from watching her last year at Saratoga. You know, obviously, it is a question mark. I saw one work of hers on tape for XBTV. It looked very, very good. I haven't talked to Chad, and I haven't read Dave's story. I'm not sure if this is going to be a prep for her to try to get her to the Oaks. I imagine it is, which means he's going to have her, you know, cranked up here for a pretty good effort to get the points and assuring she gets in. I just think she's so talented, and I just thought she was just too good for these.
Fair enough. There is a horse on the rail.
Would I
too,
play her at 6-5? No, I wouldn't.
Right.
No. But I expect her to win.
You know, Power Squeeze. I know. You know, she's going to look a little cut beneath to people. But at 8-1, she's going to save all the ground, and she runs back to that cash run effort, and she makes some sense in here.
Yeah, no, I thought so, too. I picked her second. I like the way she's already handled two turns. I know it was against Lesser, but she's won over the track. She's well-drawn on the rail. There's a lot to like about her. And, you know, Ways and Means just isn't quite up to it or doesn't, you know, kind of trip out like you'd hope. To me, she might be the most likely one to spring the upset in there.
Let me ask you about the Sir Shackleton, because so far when it's come up, Scully wants 15-1 ticking from Eddie Plisa, and Nick Tamaro, Dreaming of Kona, from the Spieths, and 12-1 there. What did you do?
I'm trying to remember. You know what? I went for a price, too, just because I thought there could be a legitimate pace in here with Toddy and Viva Con Alegria. I took a shot at Shaq Diesel. This horse is in pretty good form. He's going to turn back. He didn't have a great trip last time. Looks like if there's a pace meltdown, he's going to be one of the ones that are going to be coming on late. And I just thought he's doing well. He's 3-7 at the distance. He's won three races over this track. It's a little bit of a home court advantage. Just took a shot in there. I don't really love this race. I really liked Viva Con Alegria last week, and that was a tough beat when Kings Barnes nailed him last week at about 2-5, or last month or earlier this month. But I'm not so sure he's going to get loose quite as readily. And now he's starting to pile up a lot of close seconds, which scares you a little bit if you're trying to play him on top. But I just think this race could melt down a little bit if he and Long Range Toddy kind of start hammering it out up front. Maybe a horse like Shaq Diesel could pick up the pieces.
And finally, that 7-furlong maiden race, this is usually a productive spot. We heard some buzz on Mind Frame earlier. Brendan Walsh offers Six Kings and draws Rosario. Mott has been potent in these kinds of spots. Idoneo, 5-1 with Jose Ortiz. And any maidens to be aware of?
Yeah, I think this is a race where one of the first timers is going to win. Mind Frame has a pretty good work report situation going for him there. And I've heard, you know, some talk about him. Six Kings also, the works are good. Godolphin Homebred by Nyquist, you got to respect that. Bill Matos, you know, don't know much about, obviously. We haven't seen him. Uncle Modo out of a Bernardini Mare, you got to respect that one, too. I think one of these are going to win. Just, you know, there's just not quite enough info to really sink your teeth into any of these. And I'm going to guess Todd will wind up the favorite, and the other two will maybe offer a little bit of a value behind them.
Well, and there's a maiden turfer that starts things off, and actually you found 5-1 Grog from Clement with Rosario.
Just the kind of a guess, the breeding, you know, the ones that have run don't stand out at all of those types of furies, probably, you know, the best from a number standpoint, but I don't think he's a killer by any means. I just thought this horse wore front out of a Lemon Drop Kid Mare. The mare itself you know, had two wins in a second, I think it was, in three starts on turf. And, you know, Chris can certainly have one ready to get the job done here if he can get a trip. Again, you know, this kind of a race with a 12-horse field, it's all about trip. Maybe not half, but a lot of them get eliminated in that first quarter mile just because of all the traffic and just juxtapositioning, you know, looking to get a spot. I think Lemcaro, I think I heard, is going to come out. So that'll either get maybe Endless Rain or Hanging In There in. And if Hanging In There gets in, I like him a little bit, even though it'd be post. Hanging In There for Joe Ossino.
Yeah.
He's number 14. Wow. I think this horse from his works is sitting on an okay race. But again, if he draws in, he's way on the outside. So not going to be an ideal situation. I'm just taking a shot with Grog off the breeding and the fact that, you know, it's not the toughest maiden special weight on the turf we've had here all year.
Mike, the big day Saturday, tomorrow, and then the Rainbow Force out on Sunday, and then time to start looking up toward the trip to Louisville.
Yeah, I'm going to get in there about 16 days out in front. I've actually planned the trip that, actually 15 days out in front. I'm going to leave the Friday 2 weeks out, but not until works are over Friday morning. And typically, I'm sort of thinking ahead that if Fierceness gets through this step and he's heading to the Derby, that would be the day he would have his first work back for the Derby. So I kind of planned the trip that I could be there for that, and then head out. For right or for wrong, it may not happen that way, but that's the plan right now.
Well, Mike, of course, is more right than wrong on a regular basis. Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch. Mike, I appreciate it. Talk to you, and I'll see you. I will see you the next day. I'll be there Saturday.
Okay, very good. Looking forward to it. Don't forget Mike. Don't forget the donuts.
don't have to worry about that. I love it.
Okay.
See Thanks, there. Mike.
See you, Mike.
Mike Welch, everybody, and there it is. We got
what a no nonsense approach. He's fantastic. Not only just looking at him, but the works, everything.
Yeah,
he's got it all. And you noticed today, I guess as opposed to yesterday out here, we had a crowd going. We had some good atmosphere. It's funny, a couple of guys going by and, you know, giving us a little business, and I'm like, guess what? Guess who's going to be on next week? Oh, you guys. The Patty Gallagher going by. He's like, no, you'll be. Didn't we have a question? Didn't his name came up this morning about something?
Patty?
Yeah, I thought it did. Early on when we were talking.
Well, we got about 2-3 minutes left. I can tell you that John Sheriffs is going to sit down, and John will offer you his perspective on the situation in California, and you know.
And he could have a line behind him as well.
You know, he's as thoughtful as, you know, any horseman in the country, but in particular here. So I'm looking forward to that. We will have an extended John Sheriffs visit. I've seen Brian Beach all morning, the last few mornings, and I want to get Brian on as well. We'll get his perspective, right? Flavian?
No.
Not Flavian. Who's got?
Brad.
Pegram.
That's Pegram. Right. He's got yep. Mike. He's has yep. Mike Smith and
but Flavian. who did Beach end up with?
He's got Kimura, I believe.
There was somebody else I wanted to.
But Brian's always a good.
Yeah, he's a good conversation.
Guest, so we'll get him. We got Steve Miotti up there hiding. He's the trainer of all those Tom Seavers and Bronco Nagurskis and
can't say no Nick Alexander. Nick can't say no. I'd love to get Nick out here one morning.
I don't see him. I don't think he comes out in the mornings.
I sat next to him for Breeders' Cup, and I've told him, I said to him, I wanted to get him on for ages. Johnny D introduced me to Nick Alexander a couple of Breeders' Cups ago.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen him out in the morning.
As I said yesterday to crafty Jeff Franklin, Johnny D's the one agent missing with all these agents wandering around. That's the king of the agents.
And there's a lot of them, and they're all. I tell you what, they're all. I 99% of them I like. There are. A few. But it's a numbers game. You put that in any population. But I mean, of the current ones now, I mean, of my battle, the guys I battled with, they're not around anymore. So I'm clean.
The old school guys?
A couple of them. But well, that's, like I said, that's just a numbers game. I mean, believe me, it would work the same. It worked the same the other way. This is one of the craziest gatherings of people where literally there's someone that I can't stand could be your best friend. And so when you go into conversations with people, and it happens all over, you kind of let the groundwork know. It's like, oh, no, Steve's my friend, so, okay, we won't talk about Steve today, you know, type of thing. A lot of intermingled relationships and a lot of relationships where you have to put that aside and be professional and do your job and you know, treat people the same. But here's Brian right here. We're booking you for next week, Brian.
All right, we got the thumbs up. There we go. Any opinion, any last-minute opinions for the big cards that somehow didn't get to?
I know we go through so much information and you get swayed and then in, out. You know, and the Florida Derby, the problem with someone like myself who's involved and talking about friends, you know, Joe Orsino's one, a good friend of mine in the business. So I don't want to jinx him by taking his horse, and I don't want to pick against him either. So I'm going to
let that one guy.
All right. In Oaklawn, God, it was a couple. I do like I said, I like that Chananda to be there. I do like Zietlos in the sprint. The fantasy, boy, we've heard from just about every corner. I went back and forth. I landed back on the muffin. I landed on the muffin. I come up with 11-8-3. Who's the 8? West Omaha. You know, another forgotten horse that nobody's really said anything was even money in the Honeybee.
Yeah.
The run is okay, and it's probably going to be 5-6-1 in here. So those are the two I came with in there, and then in the Derby, a lot of anti talk. I'm gonna take a shot with Just Steel. What can I tell you? You know, we'll try to get another arch in there at a big price.
No, there it is. I want to thank Marcus and Mike Welch and obviously Nick Tamaro, James Scully, Jeff Taylor. We had a visit from Mike Smith, which was fun, and I'll have a lot of action up on the website. Probably do that this afternoon because Tina's coming in tonight, so I got to get that work done because she's going to expect
Hit the ground running.
After considering I haven't seen her in 5 weeks. Although I see her on FaceTime every night, so during the day. Thanks everybody. Thanks to Brian for a great week on the dials. And
thanks to Santa Anita for having us here.
Absolutely. Back for a whole full week. Santa Anita Derby week next week. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you then.
See you at the races.
Fall on the apple. There goes a Buick 49, black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul. We don't know. That soul is hard to find. We'll be right back.
would be